The sun is still high in the sky, even though it's after 8 at night. My head throbs from weariness and overstimulation and lack of food. All I've had today is an apple, a banana, and a handful of crackers that Agnes offered me during one of our returns to base.
So,
Jonah sighs.
Just making a buck, right?
If he's on a mission to make me eat my words today, he's succeeding brilliantly. It was a long and tiring day of teeth-gritting landings on bumpy airstrips that are nothing more than short dirt roads, isolated by thousands of miles of mostly uninhabited land in every direction. Almost every trip today was to meet villagers to hand off essential supplies that had been ordered weeks before. Jonah knew all of them by name. He'd joke with them and apologize for the wait. They'd thank him for coming, even though most of them had been waiting by those airstrips for hours. One of them on and off for days, thanks to a heavy fog that kept pilots from being able to land there. And all I kept thinking about as I smiled at that guy was how many times I've ordered makeup or clothes online, only to feel utterly disappointed when I arrive home from work and find it not delivered. And my mother, who dropped her phone in the sink that one time and ordered a new one for next day delivery. She lingered at home, anxiously waiting. Her package finally arrived just as I was coming home from work, and so I had the pleasure of witnessing her dress down of the delivery man firsthand, how she's lost an entire day of her life, how a phone carrier should understand how vital a phone is to society, how the mail carrier company needs to upgrade their system to give smaller, more accurate delivery windows, how they don't value their customers' time, and she deserves compensation for her hours of work lost. All while the man in uniform waited with forced patience and a glazed look for her to sign for it, as if he was so used to people yelling at him over seemingly important packages that it all just slid off his back. And I'll bet it happens all the time. My mother, who would never be described as patient, berated a complete stranger about a cell phone that arrived the day it was supposed to. Meanwhile, this villager was cheerily chatting up with Jonah, showing him pictures of the huskies he was training for some big dog sled race, the penicillin that he'd waited days in his field for, that the village clinic had waited weeks for, sitting by his feet. I'm not surprised my mother didn't adapt well here. And I'm beginning to see how Jonah would take one look at me, the 26-year-old girl who showed up in wedge heels and a Brixton hat, her two giant suitcases in tow, and want to set me straight. Just making a buck and delivering pizza, I correct jokingly.
Right.
He chuckles.
But did you see how that kid's face lit up?
The happiest little birthday boy I've ever seen. He shakes his head.
And you almost ruined it.
I let out a groan. That would have been your fault. He shoots me a look of bewilderment, and I can't help but start to laugh. Why would I believe you? When a cab pulled up and handed Jonah two pizza boxes from Gigi's earlier today, I assumed that lunch was being delivered. And then, when Jonah said we were taking it to a village for a little boy's 6th birthday, along with some other cargo, I assumed he was messing with me. I was reaching for the crust to rip off a piece and peel off the cheese, starved, when he hollered and snatched the box away. Thank God, because the mother and the little boy were waiting for us by the airstrip when we arrived at the village of 300. The boy's eyes wide with glee and anticipation. His mom explained how, ever since the village teacher, a woman from Chicago, told the class about the popular food staple last year, all he's wanted for his birthday was a pizza party. Speaking of pizza, I'm hungry and exhausted.
Yeah, me too. Good thing we're calling it a day.
Jonah sighs and unbuckles his seatbelt, but doesn't make to get out just yet. His mouth opens and I sense him wanting to say something and then changing his mind. We're left in awkward silence. Hey, thanks for taking me out. And not crashing, I offer, hoping to break up the sudden odd tension. I had fun. And even more important, I'm starting to get a sense about how integral Alaska Wild is to so many people. How many villages rely on my dad and Jonah and the other pilots to bring them what they need to survive. And to think my dad's had the weight of that on his shoulders since he was in his early 20s. Meanwhile, I'm 26 and I don't even want the responsibility of keeping a pet alive. Jonah's gaze flickers to me for a moment before it drifts out his side window.
Thank your dad. He made me take you.
Sure he did, I murmur, as Jonah slips out of the plane. Why can't he just admit that he enjoyed today too? My dad and Agnes are strolling toward the plane when I step out.
So, where'd you guys end up?
My dad asks, his curious gaze shifting between us.
Kala?
Jonah prompts. Suddenly, I feel 9 years old again, coming home to the painful, what did you learn in school today interrogation. Except back then, my answers were reluctant and amounted to stuff. And now I'm listing off village names I can't pronounce and passing on well wishes from the people I met.
I take it you got some pictures?
He nods toward Simon's cannon. Until the battery died on me halfway through.
You'll have to go out with Jonah again tomorrow then,
Agnes says casually, a tiny, amused smirk touching her lips. I'm just about to say sure when Jonah's hands go up in surrender.
I've done my penance. We've got plenty of pilots around here.
I feel my face fall unexpectedly and my stomach sink.
Seriously, Ren, she might be the worst passenger I've ever had. You should be embarrassed.
My jaw drops. Hey, I was a great passenger. That hard expression finally cracks with his smile. He's joking, I realize. Relief washes over me, followed by a wave of confusion. Why am I relieved? Why do I even care if Jonah wants to take me out again? Because even though I spent a good portion of it gripping my seat and saying small prayers under my breath every time we took off or landed, it was a terrifying and exhilarating day like nothing I've ever experienced before. That's why. A day I can't describe. A day I'll probably remember for the rest of my life. And the fact that I was with Jonah probably played a part in that. Sure, he's rough around the edges. He can be too brash and too blunt and too outspoken. In fact, he sorely needs to learn how not to speak his mind just because it suits him. But he can also be playfully witty and thoughtful. And no matter how hard he tries, he hasn't been able to hide the fact that he cares about these people.
Hey, did Bart find anything wrong with Betsy?
Jonah asks, doing his hat, hand, hair move. My dad shakes his head.
Said he's gone back and forth over her twice and can't find anything. Starting to think it's all in George's imagination, which is totally possible. The guy's still convinced that bird flew into his propeller because Bobby didn't sew up the hole in his lucky socks. And that he hit that stump and snapped off his landing gear because of that black cat on his front step.
Jonah adds, George is a bit superstitious, Agnes explains to me in an exaggerated whisper. I don't think I blame him. Birds in propellers? Snapping off landing gear? I'm glad we didn't start the day off with these stories.
We can't afford to have her sitting in the hangar any longer than she needs to be, especially not with that big weather system coming in. We could be grounded all weekend,
my dad says. All weekend? I echo. Will I be able to get to Anchorage for my flight on Sunday?
Might not,
he admits, and then adds slowly,
if you're worried about it, Jonah could fly you to Anchorage on Friday morning. The rain isn't supposed to start until that night. You could spend a couple of days in the city.
His eyebrows squeeze together.
That might be a bit more your style anyway.
Friday morning. That means I'd have only one day left here. One day left with my father.
Just to be sure you make that Sunday flight home.
His gray eyes shift to the ground as if searching for something in the potholes. Is he feeling what I'm feeling? That I just got here and I'm not ready to say goodbye yet? I could stay, I remind myself. But why won't my dad just ask me to stay longer then? Other than the obvious answer, that he doesn't want me here. I hush the insecure little girl's voice in my head and search for another reason. Maybe he thinks I want to leave. Maybe he doesn't want to say anything and make me feel obligated, just like he never asked my mother to stay. I feel Jonah's heavy gaze on me, as if able to read the swirl of conflicting thoughts in my mind. He gives me a wide-eyed, "You know what you have to do," nod. I hesitate. Or I could just move my flight out to next weekend. My dad's eyebrows arch as he studies me.
Is that something you'd want to do?
I mean, if you're okay with having me stay at your house longer. I know you're starting treatment on...
It's okay with me.
He answers quickly, following it up with a smile and, if I'm not mistaken, a sigh of relief.
It's your home too, here in Alaska.
Okay, I'll stay a bit longer then. Am I making the right decision? Agnes is beaming, and Jonah gives me a tight-lipped nod, and it makes me think that I am. The wind has picked up since earlier, and it sweeps past us then, rustling my hair and sending a shiver through me, reminding me that I don't have my warm clothes. Did you get my bags, by the way?
Yeah, about that.
My dad's face pinches.
When Billy went into the storage room to grab your suitcases, he couldn't find them.
And just like that, the happy little bubble that had been growing around me bursts. What do you mean, couldn't find them? They lost them? My clothes? My shoes?
With all the delays and shuffling back and forth, they probably just got shoved somewhere. I'm sure they'll turn up soon.
And if not? My voice has turned shrill. My dad frowns in thought.
Insurance usually covers a couple $100. You got insurance, didn't you?
Yeah. It'll replace maybe a sweater and a pair of heels, I mutter. My exhilarating day has just taken a nosedive into the ground. I've been wearing 2 pairs of jeans since I got here. How am I supposed to manage even longer? Jonah, who's been quiet this entire time, offers with faint amusement in his voice,
I'll be more than happy to take you to Myers to grab a few things.
I stab the air in front of him with my finger. This is your fault. If you took the bigger plane in the first place, my luggage wouldn't be lost.
If you'd packed for a week instead of a year, we wouldn't have had to leave your things behind,
he retorts smoothly. Hey, you admitted to being a jackass about that whole thing earlier. Why was he changing his tune again?
Give it a day or two,
Agnes says calmly. The ever-gentle referee stepping into a feud between opposing teams.
These things happen, but they have a way of working out.
I grit my teeth against the urge to call bullshit. I know she's only trying to help. My dad sighs.
Come on, kiddo. Let's go home.
Chapter 15. When Jonah strolls through my dad's door the next morning, I've already gone for my run, showered, dressed, and am filling half a travel mug with coffee while scrolling through my Instagram feed. To my delight, I woke up to a slew of new followers and comments, thanks to the aerial shot above one of the villages that I posted last night, along with a quick story about the little boy with the pizza, and a recap of the terrifying landing, which people seem to find amusing. So where are we going today, I ask, pushing aside thoughts about our little spat last night over my luggage. Jonah sidles in next to me, smoothly lifting the pot without hesitation, his calloused hand, nearly twice the size of mine, momentarily grasping mine in the process. My heart stutters.
I'm taking a group of hikers and their guide into the interior.
His voice sounds especially deep, cutting into the stillness of the house.
There aren't any extra seats.
Oh. I frown, a wave of disappointment hitting me. I thought he was joking yesterday about doing his penance by taking me out for the day, but maybe there was some truth to it. I focus on filling the other half of my mug with soy milk.
Did you want some coffee with that?
I don't like the taste of coffee. That's why I always drink lattes at home. I tell him about Simon's Cadillac of barista machines. He eases the pot back onto the burner and shuts the machine off.
Sounds like you've got a decent stepdad.
Yeah, he's been pretty great to me and my mom. When I texted home last night to tell them that I decided to stay, Simon sent me his credit card number in case the airline charged me. And then he told me that I was doing the right thing and he was proud of me.
My stepdad's a dick,
Jonah murmurs.
Then again, so was my dad.
I steal a glance as he takes a sip from his mug, squinting against the bright sun as his gaze drifts to the yawning fields beyond the window. He's opened a door for me, just a sliver. I prod through gently. So, your parents were divorced too?
Yup. My dad was a selfish jerk who didn't treat my mom right. Look, I've got a supply drop for a camp this afternoon if you want to come out with me then.
Okay, I say, a little too quickly, too eagerly. Maybe I'll come into the office this morning anyway. I can work on the website some more, download the pictures I took yesterday. I didn't get much of anything done last night. The excitement from the day catching up with me as I listened to Mabel trash-talk my dad before beating him at checkers for the 15th day in a row. I can't figure out if he's letting her win or not. Jonah doesn't seem to be in as much of a rush as usual, wandering aimlessly through the kitchen, his mug to his mouth. Eventually, he pauses in front of the small kitchen table, his eyes roaming over the wallpaper. Do you know who drew the nipples on those ducks? I keep forgetting to ask my dad.
Drew what?
Nipples. On those ducks. He frowns at the wall.
What are you talking about?
Those. I close the distance and lean over the table, tapping the wall with the tip of my fingernail. See? Nipples. There. There. Someone drew nipples on every last one of these ducks.
Say it again for me.
What? Frowning, I turn to find him struggling not to laugh. It finally dawns on me that he knew what I was talking about all along. Oh, shut up. You are so immature. He peers down at me, his gaze crawling over my eyes, my cheeks, my mouth.
You looked better yesterday, by the way, without all that crap on your face.
I feel my cheeks flush with a mix of embarrassment and anger. You look the same as yesterday with all that crap on your face. He reaches up to drag his fingers through his beard.
What's wrong with this?
Nothing, if you're planning on living alone in the mountains and foraging for food, and not walking quite upright.
So you're saying you don't like it?
There's no mistaking the amusement in his voice. Definitely not. He shrugs.
A lot of women like it.
No, they don't.
It's my style.
No. Hipster is a style. Rockabilly is a style. Yeti is not a style. I search the mass of wiry hairs for what might be hidden beneath. A hard jaw, cutting cheekbones, but it's impossible to find. I have no idea what you look like under all that. He pauses in thought.
And that's important to you? Knowing what I look like?
No, it's just, why wouldn't you want... I stumble over my words, my cheeks heating. Why am I so curious and hopeful that there's a handsome face buried beneath that? The corners of Jonah's eyes crinkle with his chuckle.
Come on, Calla. Time to get to work.
The sleepy customer lobby of Wild is gone, replaced instead by a crowd of backpack-clad bodies and a low buzz of excited voices, plus a wailing newborn baby.
The bears haven't gotten you yet?
Jonah smiles and reaches toward the tall, slender guy in the army green jacket holding a clipboard.
Not yet. Good day for flying, hey?
They clasp hands and jump into easy conversation. I'm guessing this is the group Jonah is taking out and that he knows this guide well. I make my way toward the back, where a plump, dark-haired receptionist behind the desk gives me a knowing wave while holding a phone receiver to her ear. I'm guessing that's Maxine. I mouth a hello to Sharon, who has commandeered a young Alaska Native woman's mewling baby and is pacing and rocking and shushing the child cradled within her arms. A tall, handsome blonde guy with a brush cut stands next to her, his arm casually settled around her shoulders as he watches Sharon with an adoring gaze. That must be Max. Meanwhile, the new mother looks on, a duffel bag by her feet, the heavy bags under her eyes evidence of her sleepless nights. The noise cuts considerably the moment I push past the door and into the back office.
Move this delivery to the afternoon and send Jean up there to get her,
my dad is saying, hovering over a giant paper map that's stretched out across a desk with Agnes, both with reading glasses perched on their noses. An older man with a handlebar mustache and a small pot belly stands with them. I recognize him as the one standing next to Betty in the hangar the other day. Dad looks up, and his frown of concentration fades instantly.
Morning, Kella.
Agnes flashes her typical wide smile.
George, this is Ren's daughter. Hey there.
The man seizes my hand. His is large and sweaty.
It's good to finally meet you. My wife said you came through the other day with Jonah. At first, she thought he'd gone and gotten himself a beautiful girlfriend.
The pieces click. Your wife works at Myers.
Yeah, that's Bobby.
He chuckles.
She was ready to throw a party.
He has a heavy Midwestern American accent.
So, how are you liking Alaska so far?
It's great. Different, but great, I admit. He belts out a laugh.
Sure is. There ain't nothing like it out there. So, what have you got planned for today?
My dad eyes the laptop, poking out of my purse. Not much, really. Jonah said he doesn't have room in the plane to take me out this morning, but he can take me out this afternoon.
Why don't you go out with your old man? Hey, you can take a quick break, can't you?
George slaps my dad on the shoulder with another barking laugh.
Maybe convince her to take up the family tradition.
My dad chuckles, but even I can hear the strain in the sound. Agnes said he's only doing solo flights to ease the guilt that he shouldn't be flying at all.
Yeah, I'd like that, but I've got to focus on this schedule right now and work in the surprise trip. And figure out what we're going to do with all the weekend flights ahead of the storm and...
The excuses tumble out of him like poorly cast dye, the truth gripped tightly within his palm. And I want to get this website up and running for you guys, stat, I add.
You are more than welcome to park yourself over there.
Agnes points to the desk that James the bookkeeper was at the other day. Great, thanks. I wander over to set myself up as they refocus their attention on the map. A thought strikes me. Hey, Dad? He falters.
Yeah, kiddo?
And my breath catches as it dawns on me that it's the first time I've called out to him like that in years. He must have realized it, too. It takes me a moment to regain my thought. I was thinking, if there's room, you should come with me and Jonah later. That would solve any worries he has about piloting, and I'd get to fly with him.
Why'd I hear my name?
Jonah plows through the door then, interrupting an answer.
What's she saying about me now? She was just marveling at how you're such a strapping young lad.
George grins and then winks at me. It seems like Bobby isn't the only one on a hunt for a girlfriend for Jonah.
Funny. She told me I looked like a Yeti earlier.
He mutters, lifting a binder off the table, his penetrating gaze scanning it. Agnes, mid-sip on coffee, snorts and breaks off in a coughing fit. My dad delivers a few whacks against her back to help it clear, himself chuckling.
Jim's flying Betty to bring that girl and her baby home?
Jonah frowns.
I don't know, Ren.
Dad shrugs.
What do you want me to do? I've got a good mechanic with 35 years experience saying she's good to go. We've got to trust him, Jonah. Every other plane is in the air today, and the poor girl just wants to get home to her husband and family. She's been stuck in Bangor for over a month.
Jonah turns to George, whose expression has gone sheepish.
I forgot Jillian that day. I guess it threw me off.
Who's Jillian? I whisper to Agnes.
This is Jillian.
George pulls out a little hula girl figurine from his pocket, the kind you affix to your car's dash that sways back and forth with the movement.
My first wild passenger gave her to me, and I've had her with me on every flight ever since. Except that one. It was the first time. Like I said, it threw me off. Yeah, maybe.
But Jonah doesn't sound convinced. His frown is severe as he studies for another minute what I assume is the day's schedule before tossing the binder back onto the desk. It lands haphazardly on the map.
I'm just going to take her for a quick spin first. Give it my own gut check. You've got people out there ready and waiting for you,
my dad reminds him with a warning tone.
And a jam-packed schedule ahead of this storm.
And I just got a call for an emergency pickup, Agnes adds. A villager needs to get to the hospital today. We were just trying to figure that out. Jonah is already out the door.
No point arguing with that one,
George mutters. My dad sighs heavily.
Stubborn ass. She checks out. I ran every test I could think of on her, and she checks out.
Bart the mechanic scratches his chin as he stands with my father and me, watching the bright yellow four-seater plane at the end of the runway.
That son of a gun never believes me.
The wind whips my long hair across my face, forcing me to scoop it back with a hand. I'm wishing I hadn't given Jonah his black hoodie back. It's more practical than the pink cashmere wrap I'm trying to hold in place.
You know Jonah. Doesn't take anyone's word for it, even if he knows how ridiculous this whole thing is,
my dad mutters.
You better hurry up, though. We're still a day out, and we're already at...
He peers at the orange flag-like cone that flutters ahead.
30 knots.
That's what those are for? Measuring wind? I've seen them lining runways at airports before. I always assumed they were just markers.
They're called windsocks. They determine the wind speed and direction and let us know how risky taking off and landing is going to be. If it reaches 45, we won't be able to fly with any passengers.
Huh. The more you know.
What about you?
Bart leans forward to peer at me through squinty green eyes. He's a foot shorter than me, making him almost at eye level with my chest, and I've caught him taking advantage of that line of sight once or twice.
You gonna learn how to fly one of these while you're here? Maybe take over the family business one day when your dad finally kicks the bucket?
It's an innocent question, made in jest. Bart has no clue, and yet my stomach spasms all the same. My gaze can't help but flicker to my dad, whose eyes are locked on Betty. I can't read anything in that expression, but I don't miss the way his chest rises with a deep inhale. I think I'll settle for just riding passenger without wanting to puke, thanks.
You sure? 'Cause you've got the best teacher standing right here,
Bart pushes, oblivious to any tension.
Actually, the best teacher is out there.
My dad points to Betty as the engine roars with acceleration. You're kidding me, right? His gray eyes flutter to me, suddenly serious.
No, I'm not.
I've met 2-year-olds with more patience than him, I say doubtfully. The air fills with the distinct hum of a small plane as it begins gaining speed. A few short seconds later, it's lifting off the ground. Betty's wings tip this way and that, battling with the breeze as Jonah climbs.
He puts on a good show. I'll give him that,
my dad murmurs, winking at me. Something tells me he's not talking about Jonah's flying abilities.
See? I told you. She's good as good,
Bart proclaims, turning toward the hangar, wrench in hand.
I gotta get back to fixing things that have real problems, not pretend ones.
My dad sighs.
Well, that's good. Now we just have to figure out...
His words drift, his hard gaze on the sky.
Hey, Bart? Yeah, boss?
Bart calls out, slowing in his retreat.
Do you hear that?
There's an edge to his voice. I frown, my own ears perking, searching for whatever's gotten my dad's hackles up. It takes me a moment to realize that the constant buzz, that telltale sound of a bush plane in flight, has cut off. What's going on? I ask warily.
I don't know. The engine's off, though. He might be trying to restart it.
They both pause to listen. Meanwhile, all I can seem to hear is my own heartbeat, pounding in my ears. The plane begins to descend. A phone rings, and my dad reaches into his pocket to retrieve it. I didn't even know he had a phone.
Yup. Okay.
He ends the call.
That was Agnes. Jonah just radioed in to say he's got an engine fire. He shut it off on purpose. He's got to bring her down on the other side of Whittemore's. Come on.
My stomach is tight as I rush to keep up with my dad, who has taken up a pace much faster than I've seen from him thus far. Is he going to be okay? I note the edge of panic in my voice.
Yeah, don't worry. He'll just glide in. He knows how to land in an emergency,
he assures me, pulling his keys from his pocket and hopping into the driver's seat of his truck. I don't think twice, climbing in to take the middle seat between him and Bart. Whatever few seconds of calm my dad's words gave me quickly evaporate as he guns the truck's engine and peels down the road. I feel like a storm chaser, our truck speeding down the dirt road, the yellow plane gliding toward the ground alongside us. It's really flat around here. That's good, right?
Yup, that's good,
my dad promises, reaching over to pat my knee.
Jonah's landed on everything from glaciers to a mountain ridge even I wouldn't land on. Don't worry. Of course, there's the wind and the bushes and the power lines and that lake and a few houses that he's got to watch out for. And if that fire didn't die out, Bart!
My dad barks, making me jump. I've never heard my dad raise his voice before.
What is it? It's 9 in 10 emergency landings that end without a scratch. Yeah, he knows what he's doing.
Bart mutters, drumming his fingers impatiently on his door. I want to believe him, but the way he said that makes me think he was just pulling those numbers out of his ass. For as flat as the land around here is, and as far as I can see on my morning runs, there's a ridge and bush line up ahead that masks Betty's descent as Jonah brings her to the ground. A few seconds later, there's a loud bang. Is that normal? I ask with panic in my voice. My dad doesn't answer, veering onto a muddy path, a private road for tractors or other vehicles, I'm guessing. It's narrow and full of deep divots that he doesn't bother navigating around, instead racing right through, sending us bumping around in our seats. Finally, he brings the truck to a jarring stop.
This is as far as we can drive.
We pile out. I don't wait for them, charging forward around the crop of bushes, my running shoes sinking into the wet ground. If Bart's numbers are accurate, then Jonah is the 1 out of 10. I don't know when exactly I start to run, but I'm moving fast now, my blood rushing in my ears as I race toward the wreckage, stumbling over the uneven ground and around the bits of yellow metal debris, doing my best not to focus on how one of Betty's wings is jutting into the air at an odd angle and how the rest of her is riddled with dents and scratches. A stretch of torn land, grass and muddy streaks lead me in. Sitting on the ground some distance away with his back pressed against a crop of rocks is Jonah, rivulets of blood snaking down over the bridge of his nose, his left eye, and his beard like some victim in a horror film. Oh my God! I dive down to kneel next to him, shifting strands of his long, straggly hair back to reveal the source of the blood, a gash across his forehead.
Am I still pretty?
He murmurs dryly. I let out a shaky laugh. Amid my struggle to catch my breath, I'm hit with an overwhelming wave of relief that not only is Jonah alive, but his sarcastic tongue seems to be flapping just fine. We need to get something on that. I look around, only to remember that we're in a field. Here, use this. I strip off my sweater and hold it against the wound.
Thanks.
He sighs, reaching up to press his bloodied hand over mine to clamp my sweater in place. Bart is the first to reach us.
Nothing wrong with her, hey, Bart?
Jonah mutters.
But I...
Bart sputters. A bout of coughing announces my dad's approach.
Jesus Christ.
He presses his hand against his mouth, trying to stifle it.
What happened? There was a strange sound, and then the engine warning light came on. And then I smelled oil burning, so I shut her down.
Jonah explains.
Everything was fine coming in until I hit that patch of rock. I couldn't see it until the last minute. Tried to avoid it, but I couldn't. Fuck. I'm sorry. Are you okay?
My dad interrupts abruptly, as if he doesn't want to hear Jonah's apologies. Jonah shifts his body and winces.
Pretty sure my shoulder popped out for a second while I was trying to shimmy my way out, but yeah, I think I'm good. Did you hit your head? No. Let me see.
I pull my hand away and stand to get out of the way. My dad crouches next to Jonah. He peels away my blood-stained sweater, and I cringe at the sight.
It's shallow and pretty clean. Probably got grazed by a piece of metal. I'd say you're in for at least 10 stitches.
One eye, the one not covered in blood, looks up to regard me.
Was that exciting or what, Barbie?
I shake my head in exasperation at him.
That girl ran like I've never seen anyone run before,
my dad murmurs.
She wanted to make sure the ground finished me off.
I wanted to make sure you're okay, because I was worried, because I care. No, I figured you'd jump at the chance to ruin my favorite sweater, I say instead. Jonah's lips part in a bloody smile as he presses the soft pink cloth against his forehead again.
At least one good thing came out of this then.
Sirens sound in the far distance. Jonah groans.
Who called them? The hell if I'm being carried out of here.
He uses my dad as leverage to get to his feet, wincing in pain, his movements slow and graceless. Even injured, though, he's a looming presence. He stops to take in Betty's mangled frame.
Damn. So what is she? Number 9? She would be number 10. But hey, 10 planes in 54 years ain't too shabby.
My dad shakes his head and sighs.
Never gonna doubt George and his funny feelings ever again.
Bart snorts his agreement, a dumbstruck look on his face as he shifts a piece of metal with his boot. Chapter 16.
Hey.
My dad's arm dangles out the open window of his truck.
You sure you're all right?
I'm fine. I'm just gonna grab some lunch and then chill for a bit on the porch. I went back to Wild with my dad after the accident, only to find myself unable to sit still in that office, partly because of the adrenaline still pumping through my veins, but also because my shirt has Jonah's blood smeared all over it. Wild's planes are grounded until the FAA says otherwise. Dad said he was heading back to the crash site to meet with one of their investigators, so he offered to drop me off at home. My gaze wanders over to the quiet little house next door. When do you think Jonah will be home?
A bit still. They're gonna want to check him over well before they let him go, in case he has a head injury.
I nod solemnly. That feeling in my gut, that dread that seized my insides when I saw the wreckage, still lingers hours later.
He's gonna be fine, Calla.
Yeah, I know. I shrug it off.
Okay. Well, call me if you feel like coming back later.
My dad coughs a few times and then clears his throat.
You still got my number?
I hold up the slip of paper he gave me before we left, 5 minutes ago, as proof. The truck begins to roll forward but stops abruptly. His lips twist in thought.
You know, I think your mom's old chair may still be in the garage, the one she used to use on the porch. Anyway, there's a bunch of stuff tucked in the back that she wrapped up and put away for the winter.
You mean the winter 24 years ago?
Yeah.
He scratches his chin, a sheepish smile on his lips.
Anyway, you might find something useful in there.
With that, he sets off, the truck bumping and jostling down the driveway. I watch him quietly, wondering if he's really so calm about today's crash or if he just hides it well. I notice him slow on the main road to talk to a passing girl on a bike. It takes me a moment to realize it's Mabel. She sails down my dad's driveway, her long hair fluttering wildly with the wind. By the time she reaches me, she's panting, and I know she's heard about Jonah. Her eyes widen at the sight of my shirt. It was just a cut. 10 stitches, probably, I assure her, quoting my dad. She shrugs her backpack off. It falls to the ground with a thud. I was in town getting groceries when I heard someone say that Jonah crashed his plane and had to go to the hospital. So I went there, but they wouldn't let me see him, and I couldn't get hold of my mom at first, but then I did, and she told me he was fine and to just go home, but I was so worried. She rambles, her words quick and panicky, her breath ragged, as if she pedaled as hard as she could all the way here. He'll be home in a few hours, but he's fine. Okay. She nods slowly, as if it's taking time for her to absorb that answer. To trust it. She brushes her hair off her forehead. Can I hang out with you until then? There's desperation in her voice. He might be fine, but he so easily might not have been. Something scary happened to someone she cares about, and she doesn't want to be alone. Neither do I realize. Of course you can, I smile. I hope you feel like digging through old junk.
Are you okay?
Of course I'm okay. I wasn't in the plane, Mom.
But still, that must have been scary for you to witness.
It was, I admit. Her sigh fills my ear.
I remember those days, hearing some of the stories of things that'd go wrong, I'd do the math on how many times they went up in the air each day, and the odds of something bad happening being that much higher because of it, especially in those little planes. They're not like the big jetliners that practically run on computers and have backups of backups. It got to the point where every day your dad would walk out the door, and I'd wonder if that was the last time I'd see him alive. That would have been hard to deal with. Hard? It drove me nuts. I was never meant to be a bush pilot's wife. Simon's profession is certainly much safer than my dad's, aside from that one patient who launched a silver-plated Sigmund Freud head statue at him, missing him completely but putting a hole through the wall. Simon's biggest occupational hazards have been paper cuts and chair ass. Thank God for this George guy. Imagine what could have happened. Yeah, thank God for George and Jillian, his little hula girl. But more importantly, thank God for Jonah's stubborn need for a gut check. If he hadn't insisted on taking Betty for that quick flight, there would have been a young mother and newborn baby in that plane when the engine caught fire. Who knows if that landing would have been any smoother? Jonah very well may have saved their lives today. They still work, Mabel exclaims behind me. I turn to find her with her arms held wide, a string of red, blue, and green Christmas bulbs stretched between them. I can't believe it! I know, right? Mabel giggles. I'll check the rest. What can't you believe? My mom asks. Hold on, Mom, I murmur, shifting my phone away from my mouth. If we have enough, we can string them up all over the ceiling like a canopy. Mabel's eyes widen. Oh, that would look so cool. Calla, who are you talking to? Agnes's daughter, Mabel. Did you know Dad kept all your stuff? Like, all of it? Mabel and I spent almost 2 hours rooting through stacks of dusty plastic tubs from the deepest corner of the garage to find everything from holiday decorations to garden gnomes and whimsical sundials. Agnes has a daughter. Why didn't you tell me? Why didn't you tell me about all those phone calls between you and my dad, I want to throw back, but I bite my tongue against the urge. I haven't had a chance. To be fair, we haven't spoken over the phone since Monday afternoon. There's plenty I have to fill her in on that I can't do over text, but now is not the time. We found your wicker chair under a tarp. It's in decent shape, I say, trying to sway the conversation back to lighter things. The cushions have long since succumbed to time, moisture, and some animal, likely mice, but the chair's frame itself is sturdy enough to bear weight. We dragged it all out, and then Mabel helped me clean off the porch, lugging the decrepit lawn chairs, fishing rods, and other miscellaneous things that have collected over the years into the garage, and she did it all without a single complaint. It's my first time spending real time with Mabel without the buffer of my father and a game of checkers. She's quirky and plucky and talks nonstop about three different topics at once, often trailing off mid-sentence. I'm starting to think she may have issues with attention, and I'm growing more fond of her with every minute. Listen, I've got to go. There's a customer here, my mom says. You'll fill me in on everything later, right? Sure. I know she means later tonight, but I'm not exactly rushing to dive into that conversation. Does she really need to know why my dad canceled his trip all those years ago? Would she care if Alaska Wild has run into financial challenges and that I'm trying to help while I'm here? Maybe she would. But maybe I also selfishly want some time for just me and my dad, without her complicated relationship with him entering the picture. I end the call just as a truck engine sounds. Mabel drops the strand of lights in her grasp and bolts out the door. It's Jonah! She yells. Her feet pound across the grass as she runs for his driveway. And I feel the inexplicable urge to run right behind her, but I resist, occupying myself with my bottle of water and an apple I washed hours ago to eat but couldn't find an appetite for. Finally, I decide I've waited long enough and make my way over. Jonah's leaning against his truck, an easy smile touching his lips as he listens to Mabel prattle on. I'm halfway across the lawn when he notices me coming and begins stealing frequent glances my way. They let you drive yourself home? I holler, struggling to keep my pace slow and casual, as if I haven't been silently counting down the hours, anxious for him to get home. He eases off the truck to stand taller and takes steps toward me.
Who's gonna stop me?
He's not wearing any bandages. A thin, tidy line of black stitches runs across his forehead, about an inch below his hairline. The cut is smaller than I expected it to be for as much blood as it produced. Still, it looks like it'd be painful. Most of the blood has been washed from his skin, but his beard is matted and sticking together in crimson clumps. I bite my lip against a smile as a fresh wave of relief and happiness washes over me. I nod toward his forehead. How many?
Just 9. Should heal up nicely.
His lips part with a sly smile.
Doc said it'll only add to my good looks. I think she was flirting with me.
Right. Of course she was. I roll my eyes but laugh. And everything else was fine?
Shoulder's a bit sore, but doesn't look like anything's torn. I was lucky.
I'll say. Again, I think of how today could have gone, and I shudder. Come and see Ren's porch, Mabel insists, reaching for his hand.
Later, kiddo,
he says, dropping my dad's pet name for her.
I've got to shower and change, maybe take a nap.
The dark navy of his cotton shirt hides the bloodstains well, but not completely. He nods to something in the distance, smirking.
Looks like someone's interested in seeing it, though.
We turn to see Bandit scampering toward my dad's house. The chips! Mabel exclaims and takes off running. Jonah chuckles.
He's gonna eat well while you're around.
Whatever. He can have it all. I'm not hungry after today. I wrap my arms around myself to ward off the chill in the wind. He opens his mouth to say something, but then seems to change his mind. Reaching through his driver's side window, he pulls out a red and black checkered flannel jacket and tosses it to me.
Figured you didn't want your sweater back. It's the smallest they had. Should fit.
Wow, it's... Thanks. I slide my arms into the sleeves and tug it on, reveling in the soft material against my fingertips. Now I look like I belong here.
I wouldn't go that far,
he says, but he's smiling. Do you know when my dad's coming home?
Probably a while still. FAA cleared us to take off again.
Yeah, we've been seeing planes for the last hour. My dad has a perfect view of the skies around the airport from his porch. I can't help but wonder if that was intentional or just a lucky coincidence when he moved here.
He's still dealing with the investigator, but him and that guy go way back, so hopefully that'll speed things up. Not that there should be any problems. We've got all the maintenance records. Should be a quick clear for me to be back in the air.
His tone is casual. Not the tone of someone who's rattled because he could have died today, but also not the Jonah who's just waiting to poke at my temper. I shake my head. He just got home from the hospital after crashing a plane, and he's already itching to get back in the air? Freaking sky cowboys, I mutter under my breath.
Hmm?
Nothing. I nod toward his house, hugging the jacket to my body. Thanks again for this. You should go and rest. Jonah begins walking to his porch, his steps slow and seemingly reluctant.
Hey, did you get far with that website today?
He calls over his shoulder. Not really.
You're not much for hard work, are you?
There's the Jonah I know. Maybe if you'd learn how to keep a plane in the air, I wouldn't be so distracted. His responding chuckle is deep and warm, and it sends a small thrill through my body.
Bring your computer over after you have dinner, and we can work on it.
I frown. You sure?
Gotta get it done, right?
His pace picks up as he climbs his stairs and disappears into the house. The skies are still bright with sunshine, deceptively so for 8 p.m. when I leave my dad and Mabel in the living room and stroll across the marshy grass. I have a plate of leftovers in hand and my MacBook tucked under my arm. I hesitate for only a second before I rap on the door with my knuckles.
Yeah.
I wait another moment, listening for approaching steps.
I'm not getting up.
I ease the door open. The scent of lemons and mint catches my nose as I step into a tidy little kitchen that's a duplicate of my father's in layout and style, right down to the color of the cabinets and countertops. And yet, it feels fresh and clean and new. Probably because there isn't an army of ducks. but also because I'd been preparing myself for the smell of stale beer and three-day-old pork chop bones, something that might suit the life of an Alaskan bush pilot and bachelor who puts little effort into his appearance. "Hey," I call out, kicking off my mucky running shoes, my curious frown still firmly in place. "I brought you a plate of Mabel's cheesy casserole in case you haven't eaten. My dad said it's pretty good."
"Just leave it in the kitchen."
Almost as an afterthought, he adds,
"Please."
I set it down and then venture farther in, into the living room. Another room that's identical in basic layout to my father's. A sliding door that leads out to a screened-in porch, small black wood stove atop beige ceramic tile in the far corner, simple IKEA-style floor-to-ceiling bookcases tucked into the other corner, and yet feels distinctively different. And again, unexpectedly tidy. The carpet has been updated to a fluffy pile mocha that's still new enough not to show wear patterns. The walls had been painted a warm gray and decorated with framed photographs of vibrantly colored bush plains against backgrounds of snowy tundra. Table lamps cast a warm, cozy glow to a room in shadow despite the burning sun outside. To be frank, it looks like Jonah's house has been decorated by a woman. Jonah is sprawled out on one side of a charcoal gray faux suede sectional. His stained clothes from earlier are gone, swapped out for a pair of black track pants and a soft gray t-shirt that lays loose across his abdomen and yet still manages to highlight his muscular ridges. He's cursing quietly as he fusses with a pill bottle. "Here, let me."
"I'm good."
I yank it from his grasp, my nails scraping against his dry, rough palms. With one swift turn, I have the cap off. "You're right. You're perfectly fine." I make a point of letting him see me roll my eyes as I hand the bottle back. "What are they for?"
"Thanks,"
he mutters, fishing out a pill.
"Muscle relaxers."
Strands of his hair dangle down either side of his face, freshly washed. He obviously just showered, but there are still flecks of dried blood tangled within that mangy beard of his. Nothing short of a pair of scissors will get all that out. His eyes are on me now, narrowing suspiciously.
"What?"
"Let me get you some water for that." I hunt through his cabinets for a glass, temporarily mesmerized by the state of his kitchen. It's spotless. Everything is organized tidily, and there's no clutter or obvious dirt. Two plates with pink flowers etched around their rims sit drying in the dish rack, along with a handful of other dishes, the stainless steel in the sink gleaming. But the most bizarre discovery for me is the canned goods cupboard. A guy like him, I'd expect to chuck cans in haphazardly. But every last can is grouped by type and size, their labels facing out, stacked in tidy rows. "Hey, have you ever seen Sleeping with the Enemy? You know, the one with Julia Roberts and the crazy ex-husband? The one who likes his cans to be organized this same way. Ironically enough, the one I watched with my dad the other night."
"I don't watch TV."
A pause.
"Why?"
"No reason." I add more softly, "I'll bet good old Psycho Martin didn't watch TV either. Dog food? Why does Jonah have a dozen cans of chunky chicken and liver alongside peaches and creamed corn and black beans? He doesn't have a dog." "But he does have a raccoon, I remember."
"What are you doing in my kitchen?"
"Nothing." I fill a tall floral-etched glass with water and bring it to him, setting it on the coffee table.
"Thanks."
Jonah promptly downs his pill and starts chugging. "Did you sleep earlier?"
"No. My shoulder's throbbing too much. It'll be fine once these pills kick in."
"Have you taken them before?"
"Yeah. The first time I dislocated my shoulder back in high school, when I was playing football."
"Huh. I wouldn't have taken you to be a team player." I wander over to the bookcase, noting what I didn't notice earlier, that there isn't a TV in here.
"I wasn't. I got kicked off the team halfway through the season."
I shake my head but smile as I examine the tatty spines, curious what interests Jonah besides flying planes and being generally abrasive.
"Those are called books,"
he murmurs, the timbre of his voice soft and smug. "The Great Gatsby, Crime and Punishment. My, aren't we literary?"
"And what were you expecting?"
"I don't know. How to Skin a Squirrel in 4 Steps, 101 Ways to Cook Beaver, What Happens to You When Your Parents Are Related, I mock. He chuckles darkly. There must be over 200 books crammed in here. You've read all of these?
That's what you do with books, Barbie.
I ignore the nickname because he's just trying to get under my skin and turn my attention to the one shelf reserved for framed pictures. Is this your mom?
Yep. Way back, when we still lived in Anchorage.
I study the stunning and svelte woman in the cherry red bikini perched on the edge of a dock, her long white blonde locks looking windblown, her slender legs crossed at the ankles. She looks a lot like this Norwegian fashion Instagrammer that I follow. Really pretty.
She is Norwegian, so that would make sense.
A grinning boy of maybe 6 sits next to her, his scrawny, tanned legs dangling over the edge, equally light hair glowing under a bright summer sun. His piercing blue eyes, though so innocent there, are an easy match to the man lying on the couch behind me. Is she still in Vegas?
Oslo. She moved back when she remarried.
Do you see her much?
It's been a couple of years. I was supposed to go see her this Christmas, but I doubt I'll be going now.
Why not?
Because of Ren.
He says it so matter-of-factly, like, why else wouldn't I go see my mom for Christmas other than for Ren? Right. Of course. Jonah will be running wild and flying my dad back and forth to Anchorage for treatment. Jonah, who's not even blood-related. Are you still going to be able to fly him on Monday morning?
Me or someone else.
A pang of guilt stirs in my chest. Am I wrong to be leaving a week into my father's treatment? I mean, I pushed my ticket back, but should I be staying longer? Should I be staying to help him while he's at home? I am his daughter, after all, even though we're only just newly acquainted. Do I owe him that? And if not for him, then for Jonah and Agnes and Mabel to help share the burden. And if not for them, then for myself? I need to call Simon later. He's always my voice of reason. The next picture is of a tall, gangly, teenaged version of Jonah standing stiff and somber-faced next to a man dressed in military fatigues. A fighter jet is parked behind them. This must be Jonah's father. It's not a surprise that he'd have such a beautiful wife, himself a handsome, though stern-looking man, with a jawline that could crease paper. I hold the framed photo up. How old are you in this?
I don't know. Maybe 13?
Still at the beginnings of puberty, definitely. His face boyish and soft, his lips too full for the rest of his features, if that's ever truly a problem. Young, but already likely capturing fellow classmates' hearts. Did he teach you how to fly?
Yeah, he was a kick-ass pilot.
And you didn't want to join the Air Force?
Nope.
A pause.
I was supposed to, though. He wanted me to. Expected me to. I applied, went through all the testing. But when it came time to sign on the dotted line, I changed my mind and walked away.
There's a somberness in his voice. But he must have been okay with you doing what you're doing, right?
He was, eventually. Near the end. Not at first, though. He didn't understand why I'd want to waste my time on a bunch of Eskimos. Those were his words, obviously.
There's another long pause.
We didn't talk for 7 years.
And then you reconnected when he got cancer? I ask quietly. Jonah sighs.
He'd already been fighting it for a year by the time I finally went to visit him in the hospital. He died a few days later.
I steal a glance over my shoulder to find Jonah staring at the ceiling above him. And you regret not going sooner. He's already told me as much in more subtle ways.
He was too stubborn to apologize for all the shitty things he'd said and done over the years, and I was too stubborn and proud to forgive him for it.
His gaze flickers to me where it settles.
And there's nothing I can ever do to change that.
But I can, because I still have time. No wonder Jonah's been pushing me to make peace with my dad, to build a relationship where there isn't one. He doesn't want me to feel whatever weight still sits on his shoulders. His situation isn't unlike my own. And had I not had someone like Simon sitting beside me that night, helping me past my resentment, would I have been so quick to come to Alaska? Jonah needed a Simon in his life.
Everyone needs a Simon in their life. I pick up another picture, one of my dad and Jonah sitting side by side in the pilot and co-pilot seats.